yes. But I've been keeping to myself.
Imagine me, a dog, moving in with a human. I didn't know how it would work. Turns out, my human's pretty entertaining. For instance, every time I give my human his ball, he throws it as far as he can. And I'm like, dude, that's your ball. So I go get it, but he just throws it. Again. I gotta say, though, the more he does it, the funnier it is. I love my human.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Getting closer.
Oh yeah? Watch this.
Watch what?
And now, before the next show starts, let's enjoy an intermission. You'll find our snack bar chock full of good things to eat and drink. Tasty, tempting hot dogs, thirst-quenching soft drinks, fresh, crunchy popcorn, a complete assortment of delicious candy, and a full line of cigarettes. You've plenty of time, so visit the snack bar now. A tasty treat will double your enjoyment of the show. For your convenience, we shall keep you informed of the remaining intermission time, 3 minutes before the next show starts. The next show will start in 2 minutes.
Just a minute, folks. Yes, that's all it takes to visit our refreshment counter in the lobby. There you'll find popcorn and an assortment of popular candy bars to please every taste. Try one of these delicious candy bars. Big Time, Butternut, Milkshake, Payday. Topped with Hollywood's super rich coating of the kind you like best. They taste wonderful, they're delicious, they're nutritious. Get one at our confection counter in the lobby now.
The next show will start in 1 minute.
Afternoon, Medford. This is Chris Earle once again with Watch This here on 91.5 WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts. Thank you for listening and thank you once again for watching. After 10 years of doing my music show, Time Travel with Chris Earle, I was thinking of what to do next. So earlier in the year, I was looking at my Blu-rays, my DVDs, my Laserdisc, my VHS tape collection. I had a revelation since I had just as many movies as I did music. Why not do a new show and do it with a rotating panel of friends and family? Over the next 2 hours, we're going to be discussing movies and playing our soundtrack of the week, which is deep audio cuts from the movies that we have today. And my guest today for the program is my old friend Frank Cotton, and we are doing Frank's Five Flicks. Coming up is the very first flick from 1980. It's a musical comedy. Welcome to Watch This on WMFO Medford.
Full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
They want $5,000.
Guess you're really up shit creek.
Are you the police?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Don't you guys ever wear blue jeans or jumpsuits like Wayne Cochran or CC Rider?
We're on a mission from God.
Good to see you, sweetheart.
You contemptible pig.
How much for the women?
I'm gonna catch that sucker.
Excuse me. You see two guys coming here, black suits, black hats.
Sit them down there.
Thank you.
Oh, please don't kill us. You know I love you, baby.
Let's go.
Thank you.
baby called Katie left me a mule to ride. The train pulled out, I swung on behind. Crazy about a hard-headed woman of mine. Man, my baby long, great gosh almighty, my baby tall. You know my baby long, great gosh almighty, my baby. She long, my baby she tall. These people who help me catch her, I don't teach y'all in a hall. Crazy about her, the hard-headed woman of mine. Well, I love my baby. She's so.
All right, from 1980, it's a adventure comedy crime musical. It's the Blues Brothers. It's rated R. It's 2 hours and 13 minutes. At least the official cut is. It came out on the 20th of June, 1980. Director again, John Landis, starring John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd. A number of great, great musicians, blues musicians like Ray Charles and James Brown. John Candy shows up. Carrie Fisher shows up. So the plot is Jake Blues, just out of prison, puts together
you
his
know,
old
Chris,
band.
I hate to interrupt, but I'm surprised there's no mention of Paul Rubens making a cameo appearance in this movie.
Paul Rubens. Pee-wee. When does Pee... Oh, yes, Pee-wee shows up as the... doesn't he show up as the waiter?
You're right.
Or is that in Cheech and, Cheech and Chong movie?
No,
he shows
right.
up in this
shows
one,
up
too.
He as the waiter in this one.
Yeah,
right?
he shows yeah. up in this as well
yeah,
as the waiter.
The gold jacket on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he's trying to pick up all the he's trying to buy the women.
They're your
trying
wife, to get little girl.
They're trying to get
your women.
Ruben.
To buy you women. Yes.
What's the guy's name? Alan Rubin?
Paul Rubin. Pee Wee Herman.
No, there's Pee Wee Herman. Then they're trying to pick up one of the band members.
Oh, they're trying to get Mr. Fabulous.
Mr. Fabulous, who's working at a very high scale restaurant. He's the maitre d'.
And if you don't join us, we will come back here every day for lunch and for dinner.
Jake Blues, he's out of prison. He puts together his old band to save the Catholic home where him and his brother Elwood were raised. Studio is Universal Pictures, and welcome today, my friend Frank Cotton. We've known each other a long time, 96?
97, yeah, 96.
Yeah,
96,
97,
right
97 yeah, 97, yeah.
Long time, 21 years.
So 21 years, yeah. And this was a big one. We always talked about the Blues Brothers over the years. I'm sure we watched it together a number of times. Sitting at home having a couple of adult cocktails. I know I played this at my very first movie party, yeah. which was a comedy one.
Yeah.
And the Blues Brothers was on the list, along with like the Big Lebowski,
exactly.
Rocket Man.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. You lived above a pizza place.
I did. I lived above Highland Pizza in Lowell. What a dump that was. But I had some good parties. So it was about 26 at that point. I was 26. You were about, what were you, 22?
22.
Yeah. All right, and we were working at that lousy cable company. It was just awful. But we had some fun there. And there were some good people there. At the time, people were getting hired every 2 weeks, and I think you were in the class like right behind mine.
Right.
So we would basically work for 10 to 12 hours and then go out and drink and talk about our day afterwards.
Exactly.
and pick up girls that we worked with mostly. That was pretty much those years.
Those were good years.
Yeah, yeah. So the soundtrack itself was released on June 20th, the day that the movie came out. It was the second album by the Blues Brothers band, who, of course, started on Saturday Night Live. And they toured that year to promote the film. Give Me Some Love and became a top 20 Billboard hit, peaking at number 18. And the soundtrack did very well over the years. And this was in a lot of... This was a lot of high school and college shelves. I remember the Blues Brothers soundtrack was on quite a few of them. I actually got a couple of neat little tricks today. In the background, it's Quando, Quando, Quando. You remember this one, Frank? This didn't make it. Maybe
Quando,
like a short...
Quando, Quando. That's when they went to get... they were at the club.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I can picture him with the hair. He played the... what's his name? On the keyboards. It wasn't Schaefer back then, but it was... Who was that?
The member of the band?
Yes.
It was Murph and the Magic Tones. Yeah.
That's right.
In the background, here's something that was cut from the movie, too. So they're doing Just the Way You Are by Billy Joel. So basically, the first half is them getting their mission from God and getting all their band members back together. And then the second half is basically the doing the show and running from the cops. It's got a IMDb score of 7.9 out of 10 on Internet Movie Database. And its budget was $27 million, which is about 80 or 90 million at this point. It made 57 million. It was actually only released in about half of the theaters that it should have been because they didn't want to mix the black and white people back then. They didn't think white kids were going to go see a movie really? About the blues, even with Aykroyd and Belushi in it, who had just left their last season of Saturday Night Live and had been gone for about a year.
Yeah, I didn't
so they weren't
that.
Sure how it was going to go. So tell me about this movie. Did you? When do you remember seeing this for the first time? Do you remember
it
for the
absolutely.
First time?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was a kid. I was probably about, I didn't have my license yet. I was probably about 14 or 15. I was working for my dad. He had a Laserdisc store.
Nice.
And one of the guys that I worked with, maybe about 5 years older than me, a guy named Paul, we would close on Friday nights. And we, of course, you know, working in a movie store, you always had a different movie on in the background. And he said, "Did you ever see the Blues Brothers?" And I had never seen it. And I remember we had put it in, and I remember sitting down like on the racks that had the Laserdisc, that held the Laserdisc, and you kind of like tuck yourself inside there. And I remember watching that movie and just being captivated pretty much from the beginning. I had no idea really what to expect of it. It was just, it was awesome.
Yeah. Still the best car chase of all time, I think, is the Blues Brothers. It's just fantastic at the end. They ruined like 180 cop cars or something like that.
Tons of cop cars. And who knows how many watches got broken, too, in that film.
Just the little parts, too, were really good, like Charles Napier and the Good Old Boys and Carrie Fisher as the mystery woman just blowing stuff up left and right. And you're like, what is going on with this girl? And then at the end, you finally learn that, you know, it was an ex-lover. You know, spoiler alert for anybody who hadn't seen the movie 38 years ago up until now. This is one of my favorites. And it probably... You know, Belushi's great in Animal House, too, which is another movie we covered here a couple of times. One of the ones you had on the list, too. And it's just it's such a great, great movie. Like, between Bluto and Jake, you know, Joliet, Blues, the two best roles, I think, that John Belushi had, you know, in the movies, at least.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just so good. And Dan Aykroyd, of course, at his prime, too.
Yeah.
Some of those dances he did are just insane.
Oh, without a doubt. In the church and everything. Even at the end of the movie, up on stage, running up and down, dancing, and Jake with his flips. And who knows? I don't know if he was doing those, if someone else was doing those.
Oh, no, that was all Belushi,
That's just mad.
Yeah, you get into that church and with James Brown, and he does that backflip down the aisle. It's like, that's pretty awesome. The film used 13 different cars bought at an auction from the California Highway Patrol to depict the retired 1974 Mount Prospect Illinois Dodge Monaco patrol car, the Bluesmobile, of course, which has also become one of the most iconic movie cars of all time. So this movie really had it all when it came to music, you know, iconic cars, just the look of them, you know, their suits. You could put their suits and you know exactly who they are if you have a poster of the two of them
I did have a poster of them when I was in college up on the wall, and it was the one that was 106 miles to Chicago, and it was sitting on the hood of the cop car with the arms folded, and you see Joliet Prison behind them, but it's got that whole quote on the bottom of it, and
I got that right here. So this one?
Yeah, exactly.
And they use that tagline, "They'll never get caught because they're on a mission from God." just a great, great movie. And some other trivia here. And the old landmark in the background from James Brown. The first cut of the film lasted 2.5 hours, and it actually had an intermission in the middle of it. John Landis was upset because after an early screening, the producer wanted it to be shortened and 20 minutes were cut out. So eventually, you know, it was a movie that was about 2 hours and 45 minutes, and then they ended up making it 2 hours and 13. And I actually got a piece on here, which is a very rare song from the Blues Brothers. It occurs at the time when they're trying to be the good old boys band just to get the gig and get some money. And when they play Rawhide, there's actually two other songs that they actually play. They play the one about holding your lover in your arms or whatever.
Oh, right,
it's
right.
Called,
right. Tammy Wynette. That's I'll have it by the end of the show. Don't look it up.
Stand
by your man.
Stand by your man. Yeah, yeah. And then there's another one called Sig the Bismarck, which is an old World War II sea shanty that they do, and I actually have that. So I'll play that for you in a minute here. So tell me a little bit more about the Blues Brothers over the years. The memories of the Blues Brothers? Ever go to a party as a Blues Brother?
No, never did that. Not crazy like that or anything.
No?
I was never big enough to be Jake. I was not tall enough to be Elwood. It's just something when you go down to like Universal Studios. I remember going there as a kid, as a teenager and everything, and seeing, you know, the cop car down there, and it's not the same one, but that speaker on the top of it that they had as they're driving around, you know, trying to recruit people to go to the show.
Oh yeah, it was the best. At Universal Studios.
Yeah.
So cool. It's like you come around the corner and then there's the Bluesmobile with the speaker like, hey you.
Yeah. You two girls.
You on the bike. That's still an attraction there, I think, at Universal. I still think they do the Blues Review down there at Universal Studios. That's such a great place. I haven't been there in a few years now. I went for about a day about 5 years ago, and it was pretty cool. Got to see the new Harry Potter moving library, and you're in the bookcase, and you fly around. It's like a roller coaster. It's pretty wild. Yeah, pretty cool. But they retired the Back to the Future ride there, which I was kind of bummed out about.
Yeah, well, they have the Simpsons ride there now, which I'm sure that you were probably equally as happy as you were disappointed with the Back to the Future being gone. But I did like that Back to the Future one.
Yeah.
Which also had an incredible soundtrack, if you think about that one.
Yeah, all the ones you picked today actually have pretty great soundtracks to them. Landis claimed that the Blues Brothers was the first American film to actually gross more money overseas than it did in the United States because of the limited opening that they did, because the because Universal Studios was afraid of doing it in a wide release. Another piece of trivia: Blues Brothers has become a staple of late night cinema, slowly morphed into an audience participation show, and its regular screenings in Melbourne, Australia, at a place called the Valhalla Cinema. And this is really cool. John Landis acknowledged the support of the cinema and the fans by a phone call he made to the cinema at the 10th anniversary screening of the Blues Brothers that they did. And he invited all the regular attendees to make cameo appearances in Blues Brothers 2000. So he flew them out, and the fans act as members of the crowd during the performance of Ghost Riders in the Sky in the 1998 Blues Brothers 2000. And that is pretty classy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. A little piece of trivia, Chris, and you kind of get to wonder how many of the younger generation, I say like the millennials, the big Family Guy fans who are out there, you know, there's actually a spoof of the Blues Brothers in one of the Family Guy episodes, and Stewie's sitting on a couch, and I believe it's Brian who walks in, and Stewie looks at him and says, "You getting my cheese whiz, boy?"
Right.
Yeah. So I wonder how many people out there don't get that reference. You
right.
know, they're just like, whatever.
It was just this random moment in the Blues Brothers where he goes back to the apartment.
Right.
And the old guy's just like, "You got my cheese whiz, boy?" And Dan Aykroyd just takes a can of cheese whiz out of his jacket and throws it to him. That's the great thing about the movie, too. It's just got so many little things in it that are just so good.
Yeah.
You know, like when he goes back for the first time after picking up Jake in prison, and he's like, how often does that train go by? So often you won't even notice. It's just great.
So, yeah, and that was actually the first time that you see Carrie Fisher in the movie, I believe, was when they first got there. And
she blows the doors off.
She blows the place up.
Yeah. Let me play our Sink the Bismarck, and then we'll come back in a minute. And this is going to be our scene of the week. We're going to do a ready for your close-up. In In memory of Matt Guitar Murphy, who passed away at the age of 85 this week, he was a member of the Blues Brothers band, and Frank and I are going to do a scene at the Soul Food Cafe in a moment. Let's watch this with Chris Earle and Frank Cotton. We are here with you until 7 p.m. Thanks for listening to Freeform Station, WMFO in Medford.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
In May of 1941, the war had just begun. The Germans had the biggest ship that had the biggest guns. The Bismarck was the fastest ship that ever sailed the seas. On the decks were guns as big as steers and shells as big as trees.
Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the peril of the sea. Stop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees.
Hey, find the German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
Hey, hit the decks a running, boys, and spin those guns around.
When we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down.
The Hood found the Bismarck on that fatal day. The Bismarck started firing 50 miles away. We gotta sink the Bismarck, was the battle sound. When the smoke had cleared away, the mighty Hood went down.
For six long days and weary nights, they tried to find her trail. Churchill told the people, put every ship a sail. Cause somewhere on that ocean, I know she's gotta be. We gotta sink the Bismarck to the bottom of the sea.
Hey, find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
Hey, hit the decks to running, boys, and spin those guns around.
And when we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down.
The fog was gone the seventh day, and they saw the morning sun. 10 hours away from homeland, the Bismarck made it to run. The admiral of the British fleet said, turn those bows around. We found that German battleship, and we're gonna cut her down.
The British guns were aimed and the shells were coming fast. The first shell hit the Bismarck, they knew she couldn't last. That mighty German battleship is just a memory. Sink the Bismarck was the battle cry that shook the Seventh Sea.
We found that German battleship was making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
We hit the decks, the running boys, and spun those guns around.
We found the mighty Bismarck and then we cut her down. We found the German battleship was making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck cause the world depends on us.
We hit the decks to run and we spun those guns around.
We bombed the mighty Bismarck and then we cut her down.
All right, we're ready for our close-up. It's a scene from the Blues Brothers, the Soul Food Cafe. Jake and Elwood enter and sit at the counter.
Help you, boys.
You got any white bread?
Yes.
I'll have some toasted white bread, please.
You want butter or jam on that, honey?
No, ma'am. Dry.
You got any fried chicken? Best damn chicken in the state. Bring me 4 fried chickens and a Coke. You want chicken wings or chicken legs? No, ma'am. 4 fried chickens and a Coke.
And some dry white toast, please.
You all want anything to drink with that?
No, ma'am.
A Coke. Be up in a minute.
She goes back to the kitchen.
We got two honkies out there dressed like Hasidic diamond merchants.
Say what?
They look like they're from the CIA or something.
What do they want to eat?
The tall one wants white bread, toast, dry, with nothing on it.
Elwood.
And the other one wants four whole fried chickens and a Coke.
And Jake, it's the Blues Brothers. Matt goes out into the cafe. Hey, Jake.
Matt, how you doing?
Hey, Elwood, how you doing? How's Joliet?
Oh, it was bad. Thursday night, they'd serve a wicked pepper steak.
Can't be as bad as a cabbage roll at the Terra Felmo Pen or that oatmeal at the Cook County Slammer. Well, they're all pretty bad.
Matt, me and Elwood, we're putting the band back together. We need you and Blue Lou.
Oh, man, don't talk that way around here. My old lady, she'll kill me. Ma'am, you gotta understand that this is a lot bigger than any domestic problems you might be experiencing.
Matt, what the hell is he talking about?
Don't get roused, sugar.
Don't get roused, sugar me. Now, you're not going back to the road no more, and you ain't playing no more sleazy two-bit dives. You're living with me now, and you're not going sliding around with your old white hoodlum friends.
But, babe, this is Jake, and this is Elwood. These are the Blues Brothers.
The Blues Brothers? Shit. They still owe you money, fool. Ma'am, would it make you feel any better if you knew what we were asking Matt here to do was a holy thing?
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Don't use blasphemy in here. Don't you blasphemy in here. Now, this is my man and my restaurant, and you two are just going to walk right out the door without your dry white toast, without your four fried chickens, and without Matt Guitar Murphy.
Now, listen to me. I love you, but I'm the man, and you're the woman, and I'll make decisions concerning my life.
You better think about what you're saying. You better think about the consequences of your action.
Oh, shut up, woman. WMFO Medford.
Be free. Oh. If you say no, Elwood and I will come here for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day of the week.
All right, we're talking about the Blues Brothers doing Frank's five flicks today. This is flick number one still from 1980s, the Blues Brothers. And of course, they have their big concert at the end. John Candy orders everybody orange whips.
An orange whip. And you know, Chris, I'm glad you bring this up because I've actually gone out before and I've ordered the orange whip and nobody knows what the orange whip is.
I love the orange whip. Yeah, it's very good.
Where have you had the orange whip? Because I can't have it. They're like.
You can still get it kind of like, it's an Orange Julius type of thing. You can still get what's close to an orange whip at the Orange Julius. It's a little frothier than a regular like Orange Julius.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So there's no booze in it.
No.
Oh, because I was over at the bar and it's like the bartenders don't know how to make an orange whip.
Oh, yeah. No. Shirley Temple.
They're like, tell me what's in it. Yeah, I never knew what it was.
Yeah. That's a good question. Let me see if there is an actual orange whip recipe. We might be. Here we go. Orange whip recipe from the Blues Brothers. 2 ounces of cream. Oh, it does have booze in it. One ounce of vodka. 1 ounce of rum. And 4 ounces of OJ. Blend all the ingredients into a blender for 30 seconds. Line a glass with ice. Pour the drink, stir and enjoy. 4 is enjoy. I can always do that part.
Sure.
Yeah.
Orange whip.
Orange whip.
3 orange whips.
3 orange whips. So yeah, the official Blues Brothers orange whip recipe: 2 ounces of cream, 1 ounce of vodka, 1 ounce of rum, 4 ounces of OJ. Blend it all 30 seconds. Pour it into a glass. Stir it and enjoy. 5 stars it gets.
Of course it does.
And it says the description is, in the Blues Brothers, John Candy's character asks for 3 orange whips. It's funny because it doesn't say asks, A-S-K-S. It says ass, A-S-S, for 3 orange whips. John Candy's character asks for 3 orange whips. The orange whip is a sweet cocktail made with rum and vodka. Make your own before you embark on some fundraising. I don't know what that means. Oh, maybe it's because there's a fundraising site. That's probably what it is. I don't know. Anyway, any other thoughts on the Blues Brothers? We'll move on to flick number two.
Yeah, I think we can move on to flick number two. We have some good stuff to talk about, and I think it's a good time to move over. I don't know how you want to go about introducing this.
Yeah, I got a nice little introduction. I got the trailer for all the five flicks that you got today. So we will fade out on the Blues Brothers, and I will bring you to 1985. For the next movie on Frank's Five Flicks today, it is The Breakfast Club.
It is now 7:06. You have exactly 8 hours and 54 minutes to ponder the error of your ways. Any questions?
Yeah. Does Barry Manilow know that you raid his wardrobe?
A brain, a beauty, a jock, a rebel, and a recluse.
I can't believe this is really happening to me.
Before this day is over, they'll break the rules.
Chicks cannot hold a smoke. That's what it is.
Bare their souls.
I'm a nymphomaniac.
Are your parents aware of this?
Take some chances.
Being bad feels pretty good, huh?
And touch each other in a way they never dreamed possible.
Why'd you do that?
Because I knew you wouldn't. Oh.
The Breakfast Club. They only met once.
I don't want to be alone anymore.
You don't have to be.
But it changed their lives forever.
I mean, I consider you guys my friends. I'm not wrong, am I?
Universal Pictures presents Emilio Estevez, Paul Gleason, Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, and Ally Sheedy in a John Hughes film.
Why are you being so nice to me? Because you're letting me.
The Breakfast Club.
Ooh.
Two is The Breakfast Club. Number two is The Breakfast Club on Frank's Five Flicks. Let me just back this up. This is Waiting by Symbol of Love is the name of the band, I believe.
Yeah, I can't even call this band a one-hit wonder because I don't even know if this is a hit. I don't think anyone's ever heard of this unless unless you have the album. When I was in junior high when this came out, this is 85, I was in the fifth grade when this came out. And I actually had this on a cassette tape.
Yeah, you had the whole cassette tape?
I had the whole cassette tape.
So you listened to Simple Minds over and over again. And the rest of the album was like, eh.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I remember that. This is another movie that I remember because of my father still, but not because I watched it at my father. So the video store my father owned was actually right adjacent to a cinema, a movie theater. And when the movie theater would get out, the set of exit doors would cut through the lobby where my father's store was. So the doors would open up, and like if you ever walked by, you could always smell the popcorn and, you know, everything. You could always hear what's going on. But when those doors opened up, it was, and everyone came out, you could just duck in and make it into the next movie. So I had seen that movie. My sister and I went to see it. I was in the fifth grade, and the next day, my mother found out I saw that movie, and she was livid.
She's mad? Why?
Oh, she was.
Because it was rated R?
She was livid because it was rated R. You're in the fifth grade, and it's like there's really nothing bad in it from what I could see. As a fifth grader, it was like there was
it's not violent or anything. It's just language.
It's just language. And in fifth grade, I don't even know if I picked up on the pot or if they were just smoking cigarettes in the library or something. But it was one of those movies. It was funny. After that, my father had gone through our LaserDisc collection that we had and pulled out any movie that was rated above PG-13 out of it.
Really?
So, so it was like a punishment for seeing this movie, it was funny because I could see other movies like Porky's, and that wasn't a problem.
But Porky's is crazy.
For whatever reason, I couldn't see this one. So, it was something else. It was a great movie, though. I loved it.
I love Breakfast Club, too. I actually never saw this in the theater. I know my brothers did, but I never saw it in the theater. I saw it on video afterwards with the date. It was actually a great, it's a great, great movie. Like, out of the five you picked today, I think this is the most socially relevant of the five, I think. This one out of the five today is probably the most important movie because of all the stuff the teenagers go through.
Oh, absolutely.
This is the most, like, universal. It's like, you got the Blues Brothers, which is a nice musical comedy. It's fun to watch.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
there's the social commentary, of course, Natural Born Killers, which we got coming up, too. But I think The Breakfast Club really says a hell of a lot about just being a teenager. And to this day, it's 33 years later. Came out in 1985, and kids still see this now, and they're like, wow, that's, just like high school, except it's very white. Now it's very white, 1985.
The exception to the rule, but, you have that, you have the beauty, you have the jock, you have the brains, you have all, it's what you go through in high school, and everyone's in a different place, and everyone's trying to fit in, and things are awkward, and, peer pressure, it's true as it held back then. It still holds so true today, and I think it will continue to do so, stand the test of time.
Yeah,
kind of like Led Zeppelin.
Absolutely, yeah, Zeppelin's great. So it's directed by John Hughes, of course, who did 16 Candles. He did Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He did She's Having a Baby, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It just, he's great. He produced this screenplay in 2 days. He wrote it over a July 4th weekend in 1982, and a few years later got it made. Starred Emilio Estevez, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald, Anthony Michael Hall, and Ali Sheedy. And by the way, that clock is 20 minutes fast. Who's that? You remember who
Carl,
that was?
That's Carl,
the janitor. The eyes and ears of the institution.
I read your notes. I go through your lockers.
I love Carl. He was the best.
How does one get a job in the custodial office?
It's like you visit John Bender. And what does he say? In 5 years?
Years
in 15 years or 5 years? Like, you'll see how gosh darn funny he is. So five high school students meet in Saturday detention and discover how they have a lot more in common than they thought. That's the plot of anybody who's listening who hasn't seen The Breakfast Club, 1985. It was done by Universal Pictures, just like the Blues Brothers. And on the Universal lot in Universal Studios, they actually have a big Breakfast Club poster up. When you're walking from like one area of the park to the other, they have a whole bunch of movie posters up, and they have the Breakfast Club up on there, which I thought was kind of nice.
I always thought it would be cool to to say, yeah, I went to the high school that they filmed that at,
Yeah, I got to look that one up, but I think that was in Chicago, too, or the suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, with John Landis, I wouldn't surprise.
Yeah, because most of the stuff was out there. Simple Minds, we talked about that a little bit.
John Hughes, rather.
What did I say, Landis? Yeah, John Hughes. Simple Minds, the song became an anthem, but did you know that Billy Idol was originally supposed to sing it?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and years later, he covered it. He had, a greatest hits album out, and he actually sang Don't You Forget About Me. He was so pissed that he turned it down afterwards. Because it's like Billy Idol was still pretty big at the time.
Yeah, Rebel Yell and Moni Moni. And he was huge back in 85.
But you think of this, and it's like Simple Minds had a few other tunes, like Alive and Kicking's a great song, Sanctify Yourself, they had Biko and some other stuff. But I mean, really, when you think of Simple Minds, you think of The Breakfast Club,
exactly.
It just went with the movie. So it was $1 million to make, and this is why Hollywood loved John Hughes. It made $45 million. So it had 45 times the return. So like something that's $1 million now would be like, you know, a $10 million movie. Something like super right. cheap to make.
Right, like the Blair Witch.
Yeah, it's just like the return on it is just crazy. IMDb score of 7.9 out of 10. It's considered one of the best high school movies and coming-of-age movies of all time. The film was actually shot in sequence, so that means they were doing it from the very beginning of the day when he says it's, what, 7:06?
Right.
So they did it at the very beginning all the way until the very end of the day. So they did it in order, which I thought was kind of cool. So they learned how to bond and stuff throughout the day. Where all characters sit in a circle and they talk about why they're actually in detention. John Hughes allowed the actors to make that up and ad lib. So when when Emilio talks about like beating somebody up,
duct taping his butt cheeks together.
Yep. And then Brian getting caught like blowing up his locker or something, right?
Yeah.
Anthony Michael Hall character.
You mean, what did he says? He says, I decided to take a shop class.
Mm-hmm.
Judd Nelson says, well, why did you decide to take shot class? He says, I figured it'd be an easy grade. He says, well, why did you figure that? He says, you see some of those guys who've taken shot class?
Yeah.
I take shot class. But yeah, he says, you pull the trunk and the light bulb's supposed to go on. But when you pulled my trunk, he goes, didn't go on. And he brought a flare gun to school. And a flare gun went off inside his locker.
That's right. And Ally Sheedy character just decided to show up for the day. She actually wasn't in detention.
She had no reason.
She had no reason to be there. But, it's such a good movie. Judd Nelson, probably his best movie. It's not From the Hip. It's The Breakfast Club.
He
was good in St. Elmo's Fire,
absolutely. I would say his two biggest movies would be those two. My two favorite movies that he would be in, though, The Breakfast Club would be one. Mm-hmm. And the other one would be Airheads.
He shows up in that with Sandler and Steve Buscemi.
Oh, wait a second. Was it? Yeah, was
I think you're right.
I believe he was the record producer in Airheads.
Let me say, I'm going to look at Judd Nelson's filmography. From the Hip, of course, from 1987. Airheads, 1994. He's Jimmy Wing.
Yeah, Jimmy Wing.
Yep. And lately he showed up in something I want to say that was kind of big. Or he's on TV or something for a while. I remember. Wasn't he in TV? He was on Moonlighting. He was on the Billionaire Boys Club. He was in 5 episodes of Ben 10 Omniverse.
Oh, he's on Empire.
Empire, that's what it says. Empire. 4 episodes of Empire. How's that show? I never watched it.
Yeah, I don't watch it either.
And he was in CSI a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I like Judd Nelson. I think he did a great job in this movie especially. And you know somebody like that. I mean, if you pick the 5 people that were, you know, the jock, the delinquents,
right.
the basket case,
right.
the beauty, right? right? It's like, who
you
am
know,
I missing? The brain.
Yeah.
You're gonna pick 5 names like yep. at the top of your head on who you went to high school
exactly.
with. You know, it's pretty easy, and that's why the movie's just so great and it's just timeless.
It's like I can picture him walking across that football field early in the morning, the mist coming up. You know, he's got his like work boots on, the tongue's flopping out. He's got his his trench coat on.
Well, that was my brother Russ.
I knew him from college before I even knew you.
That's right.
I wasn't friendly with him though.
Yeah.
I just knew who he was.
He wore the dungarees. He had the scarf underneath.
Yeah.
He just had the long hair. Always had an attitude. You know.
Yeah.
Smarter than the average bear, like street smart. You know.
Right.
And just complete rebel. But
do you see this? This is what you get when you spill paint on the floor in the garage.
It's the size of a cigar.
Do I stutter?
So he improvised the whole part of closing the movie where he actually puts his hand up in the air and raised his fist, and that became one of the iconic symbols of the 1980s. He was supposed to just walk into the sunset, and then John Hughes asked him to do a few things, so all of a sudden Judd Nelson throws his fist up without anybody knowing what was going on and said, wow, you know, glad we filmed that, and turned out to be a big symbol of the 1980s. For The Breakfast Club. He stayed in character off camera and he bullied Molly Ringwald so much that John Hughes was going to fire him. And then the principal, who's Paul Gleason, who's fantastic in the movie, defended Judd Nelson and said he's a great actor and he's just trying to stay in character. That guy just passed away recently.
Yeah,
within
the last few years.
Yeah, Dick Vernon.
Yeah,
oh, I'm sorry, it's not Dick Vernon.
He is. He's Dick Vernon in The Breakfast Club.
Yes.
You're confusing him with Principal Skinner in The Simpsons.
Okay. Or I was thinking of the principal in Animal House, which is also Vernon Wormer.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's Vernon Wormer.
Dean Wormer.
So you wonder whether or not Paul Gleason's character was based on the Animal House Dean Wormer, because his first name is Vernon.
Right.
And he's Principal Vernon.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure we could find some Easter egg on that someplace, some information, or maybe it's just purely coincidental.
So John Hughes asked both Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall to be in The Breakfast Club right when they finished filming 16 Candles. Anthony Michael Hall was the first one to be cast, and then Ringwald was going to play the Allison Reynolds, Ally Sheedy role. And she got really upset because she wanted to play Claire. So she convinced John Hughes, and then the role went to Ally Sheedy. Emilio Estevez auditioned for the role of Bender, who's Judd Nelson, of course. And then when Hughes was unable to find anybody to play Andrew, he decided to have Emilio Estevez. And Nicolas Cage was also brought in to be John Bender, but he didn't get the role, and it was narrowed down to John Cusack and Judd Nelson.
You know,
and of course, Judd Nelson won.
Oh, absolutely, and it's kind of strange to try to picture what that film would look like with either of those other two in there in the John Bender role.
Mm-hmm. And also Rick Moranis, the McKenzie Brothers, SCTV, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He was supposed to be the janitor, Carl, but was replaced by John Capelos, who plays Carl. Who's still alive at the age of 62.
Almost, still looks like him.
Still looks exactly like him.
What else has he done?
John has also been in Class. Remember that movie? It was with Andrew... it was with Jacqueline Bisset and Andrew McCarthy and Rob Lowe.
Okay, all right. It's funny. Yeah. It's funny. Again, it goes back to that Brad Pack, right?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them that all go in and out of the movies.
I guess I didn't realize that Carl was one of those guys.
Oh, yeah. He's in tons of movies. He was just in The Unicorn in 2018, and he was in The Shape of Water last year, which won
awards.
The Best Picture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know who he was. Let's see who John was.
He reprised his role as Carl.
He was he was the owner of the cinema who resided below Elisa and Giles' apartment. So he was the neighbor underneath the two main roles.
Interesting.
So that's Carl. Carl's had a good career. That's not bad for 62.
No, absolutely.
He's been in about 50 movies and 50 TV shows.
That's about 50 more than I've been in.
I have to tell you. Well, I was in Spotlight, but left on the cutting room floor. So that's as close as I'm ever going to get to an Oscar, I think. But The Shape of Water was okay, but going back to